Hey guys, welcome to True Crime Predators with Kathy Cassidy, me, your host, and I am a clinical forensic therapist. Today we're going to be sharing a story, we being me, about what I would like to call, and people who work with sex offenders call, Romeo and Juliet. So this is the type of a case where a lot of people would really love to hope that this scenario is what most sex crimes are, which would be when the boyfriend has been dating the girlfriend when they were both like 16 and 17 or 15 and 17, and then the boy turns 18 and the girl turns 16. So now legally, because he's 18, it becomes a sex crime. However, I can assure you that this is, I've seen it once in my career, one time. So I'm not sure why people hope that that's the norm. I mean, I guess it's just wishful thinking, but that unfortunately is not the norm. The norm of what I've seen is pedophiles, all the way from newborn up to, 17. That's the norm. Adult rapists, I haven't seen that many of them either. I know they're out there. I know they are. But for whatever reason, my exposure has been mostly pedophiles. So I was new on the job. I was working as a sex offender therapist for the parole division. So this situation is only with men, and they were incarcerated for their sex crime. So they served time for their sex crime. Then they sometimes qualify for parole, which that depends on a lot of things. Then when they get paroled, if they get paroled, then they are under the supervision of a specific sex offender parole officer. They are trained differently than regular parole officers. Okay? So they're out of prison. They are not free. Like people think like free, they're not free. They actually have so many, 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 many rules. Okay, so they get out, and part of getting out on parole, they, all of them, have to do court-ordered sex offender therapy, which is a very specific kind of therapy. And it's in a group setting. Because sex offenders, it is frowned upon for them to do individual therapy due to the nature of how deeply they manipulate people, and also the benefit of a group being that other group members hold you accountable, and then they also, like, they can give you support, I guess. I don't know. But so anyway, so where I worked, it was through the county, okay? And the parole agent was through the county, and they are forced to come here, right? So we are there, we have to do it very specific. They have to follow a routine of how they do their introduction, how they talk about their crime. And that's kind of like the biggest part. Well, not the biggest, but I always say and unsay everything. It's a very big part of sex offender therapy, is similar to AA, where you have to start at the beginning and go to the end. Meaning the minute they started fantasizing about the sex crime, to the planning, to the actual act, every move they made in the act, and all the way their prison sentence, all the people that were affected, and then till the day they're sitting in the chair. And that will be rehashed over and over and over and over until they get it right. And that is compared against police reports that we have, prison records we have, victim statements. So we try to, use everything we have to make sure that they're telling the truth. So until they get it the right way, they are not considered to have passed or completed successfully. Now, granted, that's working for the state or the county. When some of the sex offenders can afford to go to, or they try to go to the private therapist because they know that through the state and the county, that they have a reputation of being very hard on the offenders. And that's because we don't have any stake in the game. If we say it how it is, they're not going to quit therapy and we're going to lose money and then we can't pay our mortgage. So people in private practice who do this, I'm not saying they all do, but they have to kind of watch how they are, because they can just leave their practice and go somewhere else. Then the therapist loses money and that is how they make their living. Whereas for us, the guy, my main counterpartner, he was extremely hard on them and could be, because we worked for the state and the county, and or the county, depending on what the position was. So there you have it. All right. So every day, you know, group is run every day, I think, but it's all different groups of people. And this was when I first started. So again, like my other ones I've shared, this in particular parolee sex offender was already there when I started working there. So he had already been part of the group. So I had to catch up. Now, I remember specifically, he sat right next to me. Like, there was space, but he was the first person next to me. And on my other side was my counterpartner. Okay? So I remember seeing him being like, this guy, how is he a sex offender? He looks so young. So young. I mean, not like a baby, but he looked like 18, 19, 20, right in there. Like, all the other guys were like 30s, 40s, 70s, all the way up. So he's the only one significantly younger. Okay. Also, decent looking guy. I'm like, what the heck? You know, this is part of it when you first start working with sex offenders. It is just mind blowing just to see how different they all look, because it's nothing of what society thinks they're going to look like. So this is, you know, a young kid. So I knew he was 18 because this was for adults, so you had to be 18. And so we'll call him Romeo, since it is a Romeo and Juliet story, according to him. Okay, so Romeo has to tell his introduction, which is from beginning to end of his crime. He's trying to work his way through sex offender therapy and get this accomplished and perfected the way it needs to be. All right, so I can admit to you, I was very curious, like, what this kid did. Okay, so he starts telling his crime. So basically, he and some friends, he had a few friends, Romeo had a girlfriend who was, say, 15, and he was 18 or 19. And they had a thing going on, and one night, Romeo and his friends were at his house drinking, and they called his girlfriend, and she had friends over, and they were like, let's just all get together and, you know, have drinks. I mean, they're kids, so you know what that used to be like. So they all get together, they're playing drinking games, and the 15-year-old Romeo's girlfriend, Juliet says, I don't feel well, I have to go to the bathroom. So she goes to the bathroom. Now, Romeo thinks this is his call for some reason to join her. So he goes in the bathroom too, shuts the door, locks it. They start kissing. I don't know that part, because it wasn't in the records, like, how true this part is. So they start kissing, and then he, of course, says she, this is very common for them to blame the victim. Whether it's true or not, he blamed her. She wanted to have sex on the floor in the bathroom. So they did. It was the first time they had sex. So they have sex, and then the night's over, and they go home. She goes home, her friends go home, everybody leaves. A few days later, police are knocking at Romeo's door, because Juliet, this is his story, Juliet was very late being home. She had a curfew, and she was super late. So she, according to Romeo, Juliet told her dad, because he was furious when she got home so late, that she was raped, and that's why she was late. So the dad went ballistic. You know, the next day they went and did police reports, all these things, and then the police showed up at his house. So he, it was a pretty, cut and dry thing. He got arrested. He served time in prison. And for some reason, I know we had everybody's records. I don't know why. Maybe my counterpart had them in his lap because, and I was new, so maybe that's why I don't know the info, like what the truth was. But even no matter what, whether she wanted to have sex or not, she was 15. He was 18. That's the bottom line. So, in our state, you can't, that is illegal in Illinois. So he did time for that. Now, if you did something like that in Tennessee or certain other states, they have a much lower age of consent. So it would be different. But because so there's this is a twofold issue. One is the age, right? The 15 and the 18, 19. That is a problem. But two is even if we took the age away and they were both 19, did he rape her? I mean, in the eyes of the law, they don't care about that because they just care about the age. But I wondered, did he really rape her? I mean, I don't know. And I don't know what the trial was, but they found him guilty. So you have to imagine getting a guilty on a sex crime is a freaking miracle. They practically have to see it with their own eyes to believe it. The judges. It's so nauseating, and it makes every question in the world come up in my head. Why are they so lackadaisical and careless and reckless with sex offenders? And they just keep letting them out, probation, drop the case, lower the charges so it's not even a sex assault. Do 30 years, go out, rape again, get back out. Why? Who does that? Why? It's against the law. So we know this isn't an issue of is it illegal? It's against the law. Why is it barely punished, if at all? Very strange. I have a theory, but I won't say it on the podcast because it's too controversial, probably. But so that's that case, and I was shocked, and I don't know. That kid did successfully finish parole. That was, I believe, he may have been the only one that I saw ever successfully, in air quotes, complete it. So he is tagged for the rest of his life. He has to register as a sex offender, and he was a kid. So for the rest of his life, sorry, my chair is very squeaky. For the rest of his life, he will be telling that story. And I will never know the truth. But that is what people like to call a Romeo and Juliet sex crime. When the boyfriend is older and they were already together before that. But the law is the law. Teach your kids, your daughters, because it's not just boys who date younger, girls too. Teach everybody, once people turn 18, know, find out from your state law what is the age of consent. And make sure your boys know and make sure your girls know because you do not want your 18, 19, at any age, you don't want anybody getting labeled or serving time for that kind of situation because they didn't know the law. And it's really, it's a very complicated situation, I think, if that was true, if the boyfriend was 18 and the girlfriend was 16 and they've been together for 2 years or all of high school, do they have to break up? I don't know. I actually don't know the answer to that. And when they turn 19 and she's 17, will we break up until she's 18? I don't know why I never asked that question. But I think it's important, and I think it's super important to teach your kids about consent. They need to know how old the age of consent is in your state, explain what all of that means, and then they also need to know about having consent from their potential partner, what that means, how to get it, when you have the green light. If you don't have anything but a green light, stop. Stop. Because you make sure it's very clear that this person, the other person, is fully on board with moving forward. The other thing is, when somebody is under the influence of drugs or alcohol, legally, at least in Illinois, they cannot give consent. So that goes for adults, underage drinkers. So let's say this is true. Technically, when you're out drinking, if, you know, you're a woman and say the guy wants to have sex with you and you do it, technically you can't really give consent, and vice versa. You go out with a guy, you initiate sex, have sex. Technically, he cannot give consent legally. So I think, you know, find out from your state what all the laws are for your kids. If you have kids, teach them about this, because I assure you that a lot of parents do not teach about the age of consent and what consent is, what they need in order to move forward to have a sexual encounter or relationship. A sexual deviant, and they need to go to prison, get time, do treatment. But a kid who just is not educated because maybe their parents didn't teach them or they didn't know, we definitely don't want that happening. We want everybody to have really good, clear information about what's legal, what's not legal, and like how to proceed. All right, guys, that was a fast one. That's only like a 17-minute podcast. Thank you for listening, and I'm going to be putting more out there, guys. If you guys have any ideas, leave messages in the podcast. I'm happy to talk about your ideas. Okay, thank you, guys. Be safe. Talk with your kids.